KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. As he pushes to take control of the autonomous territory of Greenland, while also expanding U.S. territory into other realms, President Donald Trump has revived the phrase Manifest Destiny. The idea came as a surprise to the people of Greenland, along with other parts of the world, but they're taking the threat seriously. We'll discuss the issue with elected leaders and others in Greenland about what they want for their homeland. That's coming up after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Nearly 1,000 Indian Health Service layoffs were rescinded Friday as tribal organizations from across the country advocate to protect the federal workforce serving Indian country. The layoffs are part of the Trump administration's effort to shrink the size of the federal workforce. More than a dozen tribal organizations sent a letter to the Office of Personnel Management and the administration on Friday, urging for the protection of federal employees serving Indian country. The letter raises concerns about what they say would be devastating impacts on essential services in tribal communities, including critical service disruption to healthcare and emergency services, and jobs with ripple effects on local economies. The groups are calling for full exemptions for employees in the Indian Health Service, Bureau of Indian Affairs, Bureau of Indian Education, and other federal offices that support tribes. The National Indian Health Board is among organizations to sign the letter. The group told Native News Online Sunday that the IHS layoffs were rescinded thanks at least in part to advocacy by the many tribal organizations. ICT reports new Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. verbally rescinded the IHS layoffs Friday evening. Tribal organizations are reminding officials that tribes have unique political status and the government has trust and treaty obligations. A recent report shows that in rural communities home to large numbers of American Indians, including in Montana, people are more likely to rely on Medicaid for health insurance across all ages. Kathleen Shannon has more.
About 23% of Montanans rely on Medicaid for their health coverage, but the four counties with the highest rates, roughly 40%, are all home to American Indian reservations. That's according to a report from the Georgetown Center for Children and Families on Medicaid's role in rural areas. Executive Director Joan Alker says that's a national pattern.
This is important because if Congress moves ahead to make large cuts, these areas and Indian country more generally will be in big trouble.
Alker says documents leaked from the House Budget Committee show it's considering cuts to Medicaid between $200 billion and $2.3 trillion. She adds the cuts are not a foregone conclusion. Jason Smith, executive director of the Montana Consortium for Urban Indian Health, says Medicaid provides health coverage for individuals while being a critical source of revenue for the urban Indian organizations to help sustain their operations.
I would say for the UIOs, particularly, had a lot of revenue coming from Medicaid, so it's really a great secondary source of funding that has helped their organizations run and provide services for the communities.
As of January, more than 14,000 American Indians in Montana were enrolled in Medicaid expansion. I'm Kathleen Shannon.
An effort to improve response to reports of missing and murdered Indigenous people in Oregon is underway in the state legislature. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
State Representative Tana Sanchez is building on a 2019 MMIP bill she sponsored that created talking sessions between tribal communities and state agencies, including the Oregon State Police. That led to improved training and a tribal liaison in the OSP. Now Sanchez has a bill that aims to have Oregon's 9 federally recognized tribes and urban communities partner up with another state agency.
It's asking that we put a sort of intervention kind of situation in the Oregon Health Authority. They've already got established prevention models that they use. They already have the ability to get out to community. They already have the ability to bring folks into that thought process of, like, how do we fix this?
The bill is currently in front of the legislature's budget writing committee with an estimated price tag of $500,000 per year. She's concerned about whether federal funds could be tapped, given the uncertainty about the future of federal spending. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members serve to alleviate poverty while earning money for college and gaining professional skills. Rewarding service opportunities can be found at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Support provided by First National Bank Alaska, offering a one-solution, tailored approach to meet the financial needs of Alaskans by providing banking services, loans, investments, and more to help shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. President Donald Trump's idea to take control of Greenland is picking up scattered support in Congress. In an interview with Fox News, Republican Senator Ted Cruz said acquiring the independent territory of Denmark is vital for United States security and what he says is the freedom of the world. Some Danish people have facetiously countered with a petition urging their leaders to buy California. The population of Greenland is mostly indigenous Inuit people. They are taking the imperialistic threat seriously. A poll shows residents of the territory overwhelmingly do not want to become part of the United States. Today, we'll hear from Inuit politicians and others about these political pressures and the direction they'd like to see their homeland take. We also want to hear from you. Join our conversation with comments or questions by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can also leave a comment on our website or social media pages. Our three guests today join us via Zoom. Joining us from Nuuk, Greenland is Naya Nathanielson, candidate for parliament. She is Inuk. Naya, hello and welcome to Native America Calling. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me come to your show.
Absolutely. Joining us from Copenhagen, Denmark is Aya Chemnitz. She is a member of the Danish Parliament representing Greenland for Inuit, Ataqatigiit, and chair of Arctic Parliamentarians. She is Inuk. Aya, hello and welcome to you as well. Thank you for joining our show.
Hello. Thank you very much.
And joining us also from Denmark is Banuna Egede-Dale. She is Special Advisor for Oceans North Gelalit Nunat based in Nuuk. She is Inuk. Banuna, hello. Welcome to you as well. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm happy to have all of you on the show, and I know you're a few hours ahead of us in terms of time zone, so really appreciate you taking the time. I think it's probably about supper time where most of you are at right now. And Naya, I want to begin with you, and let's talk about the election next month in Greenland. Mm-hmm. What effect does President Donald Trump's comments about acquiring or annexing Greenland have on this upcoming election?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to say that the remarks on President Trump, both when he was an incoming president and after the inauguration, has caused quite a bit of stir in the Greenlandic society. And people are both offended and afraid by the comments made. But it's not the only issue on the table in our elections, because as many elections goes, people are concerned about their everyday life, education, health, and so on. So it's a matter of both issues on the table, both the American, of course, statements, but also just everyday kitchen table talk.
Now, you mentioned there is concern, there is some fear there in Greenland. How seriously are people, specifically Indigenous people, how seriously are they taking this rhetoric that the United States could take this increasingly imperialistic role there in Greenland?
Well, I think when you, at first there was a bit of confusion about the seriousness of this proposal, but I think it has gathered some more importance over the last couple of weeks with Senate hearings and a proposition, a bill put forward for Congress, as well as the president has doubled down and continued to talk about annexing Greenland or buying Greenland from Denmark. So I think we take it serious and we see it as a part of a new type of politics from the US. This does not only affect us. I think if you look at the statements regarding Ukraine, the upcoming peace talks, why Ukraine is not at the table. If you look at the matters around Gaza, the Palestinian people, there now is supposedly a deal between the U.S. and Israel about Gaza. So I think what we are finding is that there's a propositions made from the U.S. that doesn't really involve the people it regards.
Aya, how about you? Let's talk about you and United States Senator from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski. You put out a joint statement saying that Greenland is an ally of the United States and not an asset. What's there been response from U.S. and Danish lawmakers since Donald Trump announced ownership and control of Greenland is an absolute necessity?
I think there's been quite a lot of support for us, and I think it's very important to say, as Naya was also saying, nothing about Greenland without Greenland. So anytime Greenland is being discussed, whether it's around the world in Copenhagen or in Washington or anywhere else, I think it's very important to say that any decision about the future of Greenland is completely up to the people of Greenland. And that was also the message in the letter that we wrote.
Now, here in the United States, a lot of the rhetoric is revolving around increasing economic and geopolitical concerns in the Arctic. What's your thought there? How are those valid reasons for the United States to look into an increasing presence there in the Arctic region, specifically in Greenland, or are those concerns overblown?
You know, the U.S.
Yeah, Aya, go ahead, and then Naya, you can respond as well.
You know, the U.S. has had representation in Greenland since, I think, 2020, and I think in many ways it's been quite symbolic. I think I would like to see much more action when it comes to engagement from the U.S. side in Greenland, because, of course, you know, it's involvement of business life in Greenland, it's involvement of students and so on, and I think it's very important to say that, you know, Greenland has been open for business, not for sale. And we have said that very clearly since 2019 when we heard the first offer of buying Greenland. So Greenland never has been for sale and never will be for sale. So therefore, I think it's very important to have this very respectful manner when it comes to an ally. And of course, you know, all the time we're listening to news. And as Naya was saying, we're seeing different news from U.S., not only concerning Greenland, but around the world, which is, of course, quite concerning for a lot of us coming from Greenland, because we also know that in many ways, we're not that many people in Greenland, and we need to stand as strong as we can. And therefore, I think the upcoming election is going to be very, very important for the people of Greenland.
Thank you, Aya. Naya, you as well. Please feel free to respond.
Yes, I just wanted to add that we have had American troops in Greenland for a long, long time. We have an over 80-year-long relationship with the U.S. regarding military presence in Greenland. And we do understand that we are part of the American interest fair when it comes to national security. So that's not really a point of debate. We do recognize that. But we also want to be recognized by being a democracy, we have our own government, we have our own parliament, and we expect our allies to respect this. So while we understand that there is a number of areas where we can expand our relationships. We do expect our allies to respect us as an entity and not a commodity.
Aya, back to you. U.S. statements regarding the Arctic region being more strategically and economically and geopolitically pertinent for the U.S. and other countries. What measures are you and the party taking to combat these statements?
You know, I represent the same party as Naya, so therefore you also might hear that we're saying some of the same things. I think any decision about Greenland should be made in Greenland. I represent Greenland in the Danish parliament. I think that's very important in these times because, of course, we have many areas that we're also covering in the Danish parliament when it comes to Greenland. So there's no doubt about the geostrategic placement of Greenland. And we have seen that for many, many years, and we're going to see that for many more years, that there will be an interest in Greenland. So I think really trying to figure out exactly how can we make sure that we have a closer collaboration with US on very specific terms. It could be, for example, on rare earth. It could be on defense and so on. But I think it's an issue that's up to Greenland, and therefore I think you should ask Naya instead of me.
All right. Naya, what are your thoughts? What sort of partnership, ideally, would you like to see between Greenland and the United States? As mentioned earlier, the United States has had a presence there in Greenland for a number of years.
Well, I see absolutely a potential for increased collaboration on monitoring of the Arctic, both for installations of various kind, both military, but also other, it could be in concerns to the environment and other. I think we have some joint interests there. As I said, we do understand we're part of the American interest sphere when it comes to military security. So that's one point. I think that's a no-brainer. We will absolutely collaborate on those issues. But when it comes to other issues, I think we should look at it as a business partnership, and I think that should be the extent of it. So we do have mineral resources that could be of interest. We have a tourism sector that could be of interest. And we have a lot of people in common. We are trying always to outreach to other Inuits and other First Nations because we do have a lot in common in that respect and think there should be closer ties. But I don't see any collaboration in a more, you can see, governmental institution.
Okay, thank you, Naya. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to also ask you with regard to the idea of independence from Denmark, because the Prime Minister of Greenland has been vocal about that as well. But before we do that, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation, and we take callers on this show as well. So the number for folks who want to join the conversation is 1-800-996-2848. I want to ask any of our listeners, have you ever been to Greenland? Are you familiar with Greenland and its indigenous people? Are you paying close attention to these issues now that Greenland is so much in the news right now here in the United States? Give us a call, join the conversation, 1-800-99-NATIVE. As activist Leonard Peltier is scheduled to walk free from federal prison, we'll talk about what this moment means for the man and for Native American activism. We'll also hear about the nearly five-decade-long effort to get to this point. That's coming up on the next Native America Calling.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Native America Calling. We're talking with Inuit politicians and others in Greenland about the Arctic's territories' political and environmental challenges. They have been thrust into the world spotlight with Donald Trump's proposal to take over the autonomous territory of Denmark. We also want to hear from you today, our listeners. Do you see any parallels between Trump's current imperialistic push and the historical record in North America? If so, join us with a comment or question by calling 1-800-996-2848. You can also continue this conversation on most social media platforms as well. One of our guests today, Naya Nathanielson, is joining us from Nuuk, Greenland. And Naya, before we took the break, most of our dialogue concentrated on these concerns that the United States is going to gain an increasing imperialistic position there in Greenland. And there was a survey, and most people in Greenland do not want to become part of the United States. But it also sounds like many people in Greenland are not wild about being part of Denmark either. The Prime Minister of Greenland has been vocal about independence. In your perspective, how doable is that? And what would that mean for Greenland to gain full independence from Denmark?
Well, actually, we've been traveling towards independence for the past 50 years or so. We had, in 79, we got a home rule government from the Danish state. And then in 2009, we got a self-rule government. And now that act, that bill is getting a bit old, and we're trying to figure out what is the next logical steps. So we are on a path towards independence. And there's a lot of questions that are still up in the air. What sort of state do we want? What sort of alliances do we want? What about the economy? So it's not a matter of us deciding independence tomorrow. It's a matter of us moving towards independence all the time, because it's a very natural, I think, wish for any land to be independent.
Are you expecting any surprises with next month's election there in Greenland?
I'm really uncertain. I don't know. I hope that, of course, my party wins, but also I recognize that we have had the power for some time. That always costs a bit. I think when it comes to independence, a lot of Greenlanders are wanting independence, but they also want things to be done in a mature and sensible manner, and to take these decisions, it's going to be put forward towards the people in form of a referendum. And I cannot speak to when that will be, but I think it will give some good debate when that date comes.
Naya, let's talk more about the Inuit people who are living there in Greenland now. And of course, one of the reasons that I think this show will resonate with many of our listeners here in the United States is that Indigenous people here, Native American people, Alaska Native people, we can relate to what this could potentially mean, an imperialistic thrust into Indigenous homelands. Tell us a little bit more about the Inuit people there today, and are the lingering effects of colonization still present?
Absolutely it is, and I think that it makes a lot of sense to be aware of what is going on in Greenland if you live in native lands in America, because I think there's a lot of values that is being pushed right now that maybe people like us are not of the same value as others, and that is, I think, put into politics these weeks and months. In Greenland, we are Inuit people, and we are the majority. And I think when it comes to Indigenous peoples, we are kind of a rarity, because we are the majority in our own government, right? And we do have jurisdiction over our lands, over our resources. So in that respect, we are quite fortunate, I think. And the connection with Denmark has not been all bad, you know. I mean, there is a lot of colonial threats and problems still present in Greenland. But we also have a society that is built on a Northern European welfare system. So we have free healthcare, we have free schooling, and we have a wealth distribution that takes care of people who have little. So I think in many respects, this is a very safe and good country to live in. And we do have our problems, of course, with being a former colony. We have had alcohol, substance abuse, a lot of suicide, a lot of sexual abuse. And we are dealing with that, I think, every day. And I think we're moving forward with these issues, I think, in a very good way. It's not a taboo any longer in our country. we can talk about it, we can address it, we can treat it. So I think we have moved on a path away from that colonial burden, if you will.
Thank you. We're talking with Naya Nathanielson, candidate for parliament. She's speaking with us from Nuuk, Greenland. And we have a caller on the phone right now. This is Wayland, who is listening in Flagstaff, Arizona, listening online on KUYI Hopi Radio. Hello, Wayland. Good morning. You are on the air.
Oh, good morning. The last person who spoke from Greenland, you have my vote. I will vote for you. I know a little bit about Greenland, and I only learned in the past few years that it's the largest island in the world, and it's populated by indigenous people. But it did get me wondering if they had the same issues that we're facing here as tribes in the United States. And the last speaker just mentioned that, the social issues. And we see that here as well. We're, struggling to create jobs, especially those that are in rural areas. My reservation, I'm a member of the Hualapai tribe, and we're in northwest Arizona, and we're 50 miles from the nearest Walmart. That's the definition of rural, is when you're more than 50 miles from Walmart. And so we do okay because we have the Grand Canyon as our backyard. We're the tribe that built the Skywalk, and we're doing good in terms of jobs and revenue. But we're still struggling with all those social issues. Like a lot of other tribes, those are very difficult problems to solve. Thank you.
Waylon, calling in from Flagstaff, Arizona. Well, Naya, as you can see, along with our other guests, this topic is definitely resonating with our listeners, not only in Arizona, but all across the United States. We have partnering stations in many, many locations. And let's go back and talk a little bit more about the needs and challenges of indigenous people there in Greenland. And what is the current economy there, and how do folks typically make a living, and what are some of the services, and how does government work there right now?
Well, we have a small economy, but I think, and a lot of the money comes from Denmark in form of a national grant that is given, an economic grant that is given each year. And then we make a lot of money off our fishing industry, which is our own, and also trying to really boost tourism and the mineral sector, but on our terms. And it's been very important for us because we have issues in the past with the resources not being ours. So the first thing we got in 2009 was full access over our own mineral resources. Also the fisheries is ours. And our stones you can make jewelry of is also only for the local people. So we've been trying in every way, in every legislation, to make sure that the local people in Greenland are benefiting from the wealth that we are gathering. So that's one very important, I think, lesson we have learned from the past and we're trying to move through. Another thing I think was mentioned by the listener was the importance of infrastructure, because we are such a big country and it's very difficult to connect every settlement with each other. So we are very dependent on the seaways and airways, and that is both expensive and difficult. So that's definitely something we're trying to invest very heavily in. As also mentioned by the listener, that it's so important that you have access to the rest of the communities in order to build your own wealth, to be able to work, to be able to come to the groceries and so on.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned the seaways, and we're going to talk more about the seaways and specifically some of the impact now with regard to climate change. But one of the topics here, and what a lot of folks are focusing on, is that there is less ice now in that Arctic region, and that presents an opportunity for faster shipping routes from Europe to Asia. And that's one of the key reasons why we're hearing some of this rhetoric with regard to the United States and economic interests. But I want to ask you as well, Naya, does any of this present any economic opportunities perhaps for Greenland in the future?
Yeah, well, I'm always a bit sad about that question. I mean, I understand it, but the climate change, the climate crisis is really bad for Greenlandic culture as a whole. And no doubt that some areas will now be laid open that wasn't open before. But I think all in all, it's not to any of us, any of our benefit as people of the world, because it comes with so much more disaster other places. So yes, absolutely some things will be possible within the next couple of decades. but at the same speed and time, there will be massive problems all over the world as well due to the climate crisis. So I think it's a bittersweet pill to have to swallow that some things will be more manageable in the future and more accessible.
All right. Thank you, Naya. Aya Chemnitz, back to you. And I'd like to pose the similar question there with regard to any potential economic opportunities there for the people of Greenland, or what are some ambitions economically of the people in Greenland?
I think just expanding opportunities when it comes to fisheries, extractive mining, but also when it comes to tourism, and especially the last two is very important for the Greenlandic economy. And you know that 50% of the block grant, 50% of the income in Greenland is from the block grant from Denmark today. So I think really doing everything that we can to make sure that we have better economy of Greenland is very important. And, you know, right now it's about 98% of all our income and the export that we have comes from fisheries. And that's why it's very important to say, how can we diversify our economy? So when, for example, the prices of the fish or the level of for example, the quotas or so on are challenged, then we stand on a better economic ground than what we do right now. So I think there's so much that we need to do. And I think it's also quite interesting for us to work much closer with other indigenous communities. And that's why the government of Greenland also said that we would like to have a closer collaboration with Alaska, but also with Nunavut. And I think just opening up a flying route, for example, from Nuuk to Nunavut, which will be open this summer, is one of the areas that are quite interesting, because I think in many ways we have so much when it comes to culture, when it comes to language, that I think we can share from each other. And I think it's very important for us to say that we're a part of the Arctic and we're a part of the Nordic, and how do we develop our society with one foot in both areas, and especially when it comes to the culture. I think there's so many similarities that we have together with Alaska and with Nunavut.
It sure sounds like there are a lot of similarities, Aya. And are there also a lot of indigenous people living in Greenland who maintain a subsistence lifestyle like what we see in many parts of Alaska?
Yes, we see that very much. And I think in many ways, just fishers and hunters is, of course, a very important trade in Greenland. And in many ways, even though if you work in an office, you could also be hunting in the winter or on the weekends, for example. So whether it's reindeer hunting or whether it's just going out hunting, I think for a lot of people in Greenland, it's something that you do. And if you come to the harbor of Greenland, you'll see that many people, they have a boat and just going out is something that you do both for fishers and hunters, but also for just, you know, people having a different work, office work. It's very important for them to come out to their hut, for example, and go fishing and so on. So I think it's very important to say that we're living gratefully out of nature in many ways. And I think I usually say that most Greenlanders, they have an extra fridge for all the things that they're hunting. Mm. And this is, you know, even friends that you have that have an office work. And I would also like to see that ICC is doing an amazing job when it comes to collaboration between indigenous communities around the Arctic. And I think especially focusing on youth leadership, so we make sure that the next generation has even more knowledge on what it means to be indigenous, is very important in order to make sure the next generation is also focusing on indigenous values and so on. So even looking at trade barriers, which I know that ICC is looking at right now between Nunavut, Alaska, and Greenland, is something that I find very important when it comes to, for example, having a much more diversifying economy of Greenland.
Okay, I thank you. And the way you describe the lifestyle for many folks in Greenland, it certainly does sound similar to what we hear from many of our guests and listeners from Alaska. And speaking of Alaska, let's get some calls going from Alaska, all our partnering stations up there in Alaska. If you'd like to join the show, if you're listening right now and this conversation is resonating with you, maybe you see some similarities between what we're hearing about in Greenland and your own native village there in Alaska, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848. That number again, 1-800-996-2848. And just for some clarification for our listeners as well, ICC, we heard Aya mention that a few moments ago. That stands for Inuit Circumpolar Council. And I want to ask you another question, because you are a member of the Danish Parliament. You're speaking with us from Copenhagen in Denmark right now. And I know there's a pretty wide expanse of land there, or ocean, between Copenhagen and Greenland. They're 3 hours apart in terms of time. Does that present any unique challenges for you to represent people but yet be so far away in Denmark while you actually have to do your work there in Parliament?
Yes, of course. I think it's in many ways two different cultures. It's two different ways of thinking and living. And it's also very far away from each other. So in kilometers, it's around 4,000 kilometers. So it's almost half a day to go from Copenhagen to Greenland. And I think in many ways, really trying to understand that so many decisions about the North is being taken in the South, whether it's in Copenhagen, Washington, Oslo, or other places. And it's affecting the North. And therefore, I think it's very important to say that we need to have involvement of Greenlanders. And that's why I'm so proud of everything that we have done when it comes to developing the political system in Greenland, with first the home rule and then the self-rule governing system that we have in Greenland. And I think really being thankful for former generations really doing a lot of work in order to make sure that you know, we have a better system now than when we than 40 years ago, for example. And, you know, just covering around 30 areas on behalf of Greenland in the Danish Parliament, it's really important for me to be very humble, to really listen to the people back home, what they're saying, not just, you know, once a month or something like that, but really trying to engage people as often as I can in order to make sure that I really understand what is the thoughts in Greenland on different issues. So, for example, justice system is one of them. Foreign affairs is another one, and so on. So there's so much to do, and in order to do that, you really need to be humble. You really need to be curious.
Okay.
Because things also.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to take a break, but we're going to come back and we're going to continue this conversation. Stay with us, listeners.
Trickster Cultural Center, an authentic first voice of Native American veterans and cultural arts, will host the 2025 Summer Youth Powwow to foster community relations, youth literacy, cultural exchange, and provide local community resources. Trickster Cultural Center's Summer Youth Powwow is open to the public at no charge and takes place May 31st in Schaumburg, Illinois. More at TricksterCulturalCenter.org/summer-youth-powwow-2025. Trickster Cultural Center supports this show.
When you file online for your Permanent Fund Dividend, every Alaskan can support great causes, including Native America Calling. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM, Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Through your support, you can help us make a difference in our community when you pick, click, give for causes you care about. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Program support by AmeriCorps Vista, where you can kickstart your career and help others in your community. With AmeriCorps Vista, you can serve in an office setting and address issues of poverty while gaining career experience and building your leadership skills. Learn more by visiting AmeriCorps.gov/Vista today. That's AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Forward Scholars Fund scholarships are open now. Native Forward supports Native students' higher education journeys, offering over 40 scholarship opportunities, programs, and resources designed for Native students. Info and applications at nativeforward.org, who support this show. Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org.
You're listening to Native America Calling. We still have time for you to join this conversation about Greenland with our guests. You can call us with comments or questions, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We have a third guest on our show today, but before I bring her into the conversation, I want to give Aya Chemnitz an opportunity to finish what she was saying. We had to take a quick break there, Aya, but you were talking a little bit about the humility that you have to maintain in order to represent your people in Greenland there in the Danish Parliament.
I just really think it's important to understand that I work between two different cultures, and everything that I need to explain to a Danish audience is something that really also needs to be deeply rooted in the Greenlandic culture. And how do I do that? So I've been representing Greenland for almost 10 years, and really trying to find that diplomatic balance has been very important for me. And nothing about us without us is something that I've said from day one. It's very important for me to make sure that we're engaged in different negotiation that has to do with Greenland, and a strong Greenlandic representation in the Danish Parliament is very important for me. And I just recently decided that I wasn't going to run for the Greenlandic Parliament, which I used to be a member of many years ago, because I think it's very important to have the strong representation in Greenland, or from Greenland, of course, but in the Danish Parliament. And I think in many ways it's challenging times that we're looking into, and I'm really supporting the party Inuit Ataqatigiit that I'm representing, because I think they're the only ones that can get us through all of this. But I also see, I really see it as a challenging time, because I think it's very important to have a very clear message to US, but also to Denmark, of course, and maybe also even to EU, to figure out exactly who should we collaborate with, and in what manner, and what is the right path going forward for Greenland? I think many of us are asking that question to ourselves right now, and therefore I think not only talking about, you know, really high politics when it comes to foreign affairs and relationship between Greenland and Denmark, but also something that's very down to earth and very much about everyday life. We were talking a little bit about, for example, the prices. It's very expensive to live in Greenland, whether it's housing, whether it's, you know, going grocery shopping or anything else. I think it's very important to say that we need to strengthen the community and the economy of Greenland, and therefore also the healthcare system, which is something that we're seeing that 25% of everybody from Greenland, they're living in Denmark today, and some have moved because of the healthcare system. That is what at least a lot of people are telling me. And this is not just one person in the family, this is the whole family usually, and it could be also be generations that has moved from Greenland. And I think, you know, every Inuk in Greenland is so important for the development of Greenland, and therefore I think it's so important to have more people living in Greenland, and therefore we should also talk about healthcare and these everyday day-to-day life in Greenland, and strengthen those, because otherwise we'll be too few in Greenland.
All right. Aya, thank you so much for joining the conversation, and Naya Nathanielson as well. Really appreciate your insights. I'm going to take a caller, and then we're going to bring in our next guest. And this is Michelle, who's listening on Keeley Radio in South Dakota, Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Hello, Michelle. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Good morning. Thank you, Sean. Thank you so much for hosting Native America Calling. I really enjoy your work. And thank you for having this show. Yes, I'm following this issue, and I'm calling to honor my friend Mila, who was an Inuit from Greenland. Actually, her father was Danish, but her mother was Inuit. And I knew her when she lived in Chicago, when I lived in Chicago. She's passed away many years ago now, but she was a beautiful woman. And so, you know, this issue just touches me through my connection with her. And I've seen documentaries through Vision Maker Media and always just kind of followed and wanted to learn more. I'm also want to comment that I am so insulted by the mainstream media that thinks this is a joke. It's outrageous that, you know, we would be stealing Native American land or Native Indigenous people land in 2025, whether it's Greenland or Panama or Canada, whatever. It's just outrageous. And I think it may be because the media doesn't really understand the issue, as your guests were saying a little bit. Also, her last comment leads to what I wanted to ask, is if you could talk about what is the population makeup. We're hearing from some that it's as low as 43,000, or I've heard 57,000. What is the population of Greenland, and of that population, what's the percentage of Native Greenland people?
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Michelle, thank you. That's a great call. Really appreciate it. And I think a lot of our listeners can definitely relate to how you describe so much of the message that we're seeing right now in the media is this, like, it's a joke. Yeah, I think a lot of people can definitely relate to that. And as Native people, as Indigenous people, yeah, we don't joke around with stuff like land, for sure. So thank you, Michelle, and thank you for commenting and complimenting our show as well. Really appreciate that. So you had a question with regard to the population makeup of Greenland. Let's let our next guest answer that question. This is Benuna Egede-Dale, and she joins us from Denmark. She works in an office that's based in Nuuk, however. She is Inuk. And Benuna, thank you for joining the show. Really appreciate your time as well. And I want to talk a little bit more about some of the climate conditions and some of the issues that we've talked about earlier with you. But before we do that, please, our caller Michelle is interested in knowing, what is the current population of Greenland? What percentage of those folks are Inuit people or Inuk people?
Thank you, Sean. It is a really great question. As far as I recall, we are about 56,000, 57,000 people, which is not that much. But in general, we estimate that about 80-85% of those are of Inuit heritage. So it's true, it's the majority.
Yeah, huge majority. Huge majority. Thank you, Benuna. Let's now talk about some of the conditions with regard to the climate there, not only in Greenland, but that Arctic region. I know that Greenland has lost hundreds of billions of tons of ice for a number of years now. Tell us from your own experience, how have you seen climate conditions worsen in your own lifetime?
Yes, we see a lot of the same changes as one would in Alaska or other Arctic regions. The temperatures are rising faster than anywhere else. The weather gets unstable and harder to predict. And then we have this ice sheet, which is melting at crazy rates. I've seen how it just flushed away a bridge and a road. And it's not going to be the last time that it will risk that. So we do see a lot of different changes. I've been visiting communities in the north that depend on the sea ice for transport and for fishing, hunting in the wintertime. And they tell me how the ice is forming later and breaking earlier, and sometimes even break multiple times during the winter. And it puts lives at risk. So we also see the northward movement of species, and all the ice-dependent species are being pressured towards the north. I know that in Alaska, you do have a lot of erosion caused from the permafrost melt. We have a bit less of that in Greenland, but due to the ice sheet melting, we also see this continuous land rise. The country is actually becoming higher, 2 centimeters every year, some places.
Benuna, what have been some measures taken to slow this extreme melting that you're describing?
Well, we haven't been able to do much ourselves. I know that, for example, the Greenlandic national energy consumption, we've been pushing hard towards hydropower. So we can proudly say that about 80% of our energy national-wise is coming from hydropower. But then if we do open up some mineral extraction activities, just one single mine will usually have a big percentage of emissions. So this is a challenge. We see all these challenges coming from climate change, but also challenges from human activities. Some our own Greenlandic activities, but also foreign activities. If I may mention some of the activities in Greenland that poses environmental challenges is, as the others mentioned, we have this need of traveling by air or by sea, which is still hard to do with electric vessels. We have those smaller discharges of untreated sewage and landfills, which is a cause of our small rural communities. But we also have past activities that have shaped some of our environment, for example, the old Danish legacy mines, as we call it, that are still polluting. For example, the cryolite mine, which is in Ividuit, which is really much in the Danish media and Greenlandic media these days. But that's just one mine out of several. And we also have a lot of abandoned US military bases in Greenland, which was left basically as they were. So we do have a lot of rusty, leaky oil barrels and used vessels and chemicals here and there, which we have an agreement with the Danish government to try to clean up at least some of these sites. So yes, we have a lot of different environmental challenges that we're facing in Greenland.
Mm-hmm. This is really helpful as you describe it, because of course the mining industry, or the potential for a mining industry, is another central motivator to the United States' interest in Greenland. Talk more about how some of these changes are impacting the traditional Inuit lifestyles.
You mean having mines in general?
The mines, as well as these abandoned military bases you've described, along with just some of the cleanup that potentially needs to occur. Issues related to climate change.
Yes. Well, at least we're feeling a bit more safe that the monitoring program of the Camp Century, this camp which is hidden or buried down in the ice sheet, the latest prognosis shows that the radioactive wastewater there will stay in the ice. So that's a big relief for us when considering how climate change is doing its best at melting the ice.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to say that learning from the past, we have all these legacy mines, as I mentioned. They have caused a lot of environmental long-lasting impacts. But since we took home the self-government area of responsibility, which is the mineral resources, we've been building up our own legislation regarding environmental impact assessments. And were based on Danish and European standards, and then we've been trying to adapt them to Greenlandic culture and Greenlandic conditions. And I've seen improvements since 2009, which makes me believe that making mines today would be with much stronger environmental protection than we would have seen those 50 years ago. But what we want to emphasize is to have a larger positive impact on the Greenlandic communities in the form of revenues and capacity building. We do need these kind of incomes, but not at any cost.
But Una, thank you so much. as you describe some of these economic factors that we need to consider as well in Greenland, as well as other regions of the Arctic, this show is really powerful. And the time that you and the other guests have spent with us and better helping us understand these issues from an Indigenous perspective. And here at Native America Calling, that's what we are focused on, is the Indigenous perspective of how some of this current talk and some of these efforts perhaps to acquire Greenland and what that impact could be, not just in the United States, not just in Greenland, not just for Denmark, but also specifically the Indigenous people that call that territory their homes. And with that, we're going to have to wrap up the conversation. I want to thank all of our guests who joined us today, Aya Chemnitz, Naya Nathanielson, and Banuna Egedale. Please join us again tomorrow when we'll take a look at what Leonard Peltier's release means for Native activism. Hope you'll tune in. I'm Sean Spruce.
We are skipping out a little bit early on Native American Calling. Hopefully I didn't cut too much off. I just wanted to let everyone know we will be bringing you live coverage of the Aleutians Eastboro School District. This is a special meeting of the school board. The packet and agenda are posted at apradio.org, and the meeting information is all there as well. We'll be starts about 10 a.m., is what the agenda says. So we've got links and everything. And if you go to aebsd.org, that's the school district's website, and they have the collection of the packets and agenda there as well. Thanks for tuning in. This is KSDP. This is Virgil. Happy President's Day.
.com, who support this show. Repatriation is the return of ancestors and stolen culture. The Association on American Indian Affairs and the Tunica Biloxi Tribe will host the 10th Annual Repatriation Conference, February 25th, 26th, and 27th, 2025, in Marksville, Louisiana. The conference will provide expert hands-on training about domestic and international repatriation. Registration and more information available at Indian-Affairs.org. The Association on American Indian Affairs supports this show.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
They say that falling in love is wonderful, so wonderful, so so they say. The thing that's known as romance is wonderful. So wonderful.